Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. We are super happy to announce that going forward, we will be back on a more regular basis, ideally releasing a new episode once a week. So look for us in your feed. Today, we have the fourth episode in our career story series. I am talking to Kathleen Marinaccio. She is Vice President, Design Services and Presentation Strategies at Warner Brothers Global Insights and Analytics. As you will hear in this conversation, however, she's a whole lot more than her job title. She chats with me today on how she's gotten to where she is and what she's learned that can help you progress in your own creative career. Career Stories are brought to you by Promax's People and Culture Council. It's a network of marketing, creative services, and human resources executives representing every segment of our industry, from broadcast and cable networks to digital platforms, streaming services, and studios. The PCC's mission is to not only foster a community of diverse talent, but also to celebrate the unique perspectives within our industry and develop a greater sense of community and belonging. Hello, Kathleen. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's so exciting.
I'm excited to talk to you. We were talking a little bit before the actual recording of the podcast, and I was telling Kathleen that I saw her do a Thrive presentation at Promax 2 years ago, and it was super entertaining and engaging. So I'm really excited to do this.
I love that. I wish I could do Promax presentation every year.
Okay, awesome. I could maybe set that up for you, but we'll talk about that off air. All right, so to kick us off, why don't you just tell us a little bit, I mean, this is a lot to tell in a little bit, but tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you to the place you are now.
Sure. Let's see. Well, in ninth grade, we want to go all the way back then, I had an amazing art teacher. Just to like really sum it off, as a professor, I like to kind of throw this out there. So in ninth grade, I had a great art teacher who looked at me and said, "You need to do this for a living." And I looked at him and I said, "I don't know what this is, but I don't really like anything else. So help me get to that place." So he basically told me I needed to apply for this like Pratt scholarship thing. So all high school, that is what I worked towards, applying to the Pratt Scholarship and only going to Pratt Institute. So I knew that I was going to be some form of designer from the very beginning. So I did. I went to Pratt. I got a job before I even graduated at like a pattern company, and I was interning at NBC Studios. And I said to myself, I want to work in entertainment. So right from the beginning, I knew I wanted to do that. I didn't really know what that meant, but if I say it out loud, I tend to do it. So I started doing design on the 17th floor at NBC, which was really cool. I did like advertising and promotion, and I got coffee, but I also like made stats and made ads. Like I literally did, you know, like an ad for some race up the Empire State Building, and I did something for NBC Sports and something for the Breeders' Cup, and like they gave me like real projects as an intern. So it was super fun. So after that, I couldn't find work in entertainment, so I ended up at HarperCollins Publishing, which I loved because it taught me how to write. I learned how to write synopses for the backs of, you know, books, and how to design and edit at the same time. Eventually, I ended up freelancing at Marvel Comics, and I ended up using my design skills, my computer skills, and my writing skills, because not a lot of designers were doing mechanicals and production on the computer in the early 90s, and I knew how to do that. So that was kind of like my thing that I had that a lot of designers didn't have back then. So I was getting a lot of freelance work. So I started getting entertainment jobs and, you know, publishing jobs and marketing jobs and fashion jobs, because I could do the whole thing. I could come up with the ideas, I could edit, I could build the mechanical, you know, that word that we used to use a long time ago, and I could see it through to the end. So that's kind of really how I got my start in the industry, going from, you know, NBC to HarperCollins to Marvel. And then from Marvel, I met a guy and he was like, "You need to come out to LA and run our creative team at New World Entertainment." And I was like, "I don't know exactly what that means, but okay."
You were like, yes, I do.
And you want to double my salary? 100%. So I got on a plane, I came out, I interviewed, and I got the job. From there, which is monumental, you think I would have stayed on like that Marvel side, but what happened was I met this guy who used to work at Warner, and he met me, and he loved my brain. He loved that I could design anything. He used to say I could design the phone book, and he started hiring me to do his research presentations. And that was in like 1995. And somehow that was like a little side niche that I did for a bunch of different companies. And then, you know, I ran a business for 13 years doing those kind of presentations and other kind of design, like real estate, entertainment, a whole wide range, toy. I don't know. I can, like, everything.
That was Fishbrain.
That was Fishbrain. Yeah. So Fishbrain was, you know, radio promotion, entertainment projects, real estate, websites, music studios, again, designing the phone book. And I kept coming back to my gig at Warner, like, you know, hey, can you design something for our presentation? Hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do that? And eventually they just asked me to come work here. So I left my company.
Was New World acquired by Warner's or no?
No, New World has nothing to do. New Line.
New Line
was acquired. Yeah. New World got bought in a handshake deal on an airplane by Fox back in 96 when they were like, we're not selling. And then they sold. So a lot of the people that were at New World ended up at Fox. I actually had gotten an offer from an in-house at a print shop. They had an in-house agency that did Disney, and they wanted me to come over and do their Disney client. So I actually went there instead of going to Fox.
Okay.
You know, my goal was entertainment, but my goal was also to always double my salary.
It's a good goal.
Good goal.
So
I've worked in a lot of industry and for a lot of people, and I still am connected with, you know, all of these people.
I have to say, I'm super jealous of two things. Although one of the things, I was sort of like myself, so I relate to it. But I'm super jealous of having all the computer design skills. I'm actually right now trying to learn Illustrator, and it's hilarious, but terrible.
Oh my God.
And then, and I'm a writer, 100% not a designer. So it's a pretty funny process. I'm like, look, I made an egg. It's amazing. And then the other part I think is helpful as people adult, as it were, which is that when you were in ninth grade, you were given such clear direction and then you got even more directed. I just think it makes life easier when you're that clear about where you're headed. Although it's really good that the Pratt thing worked out, because had it not, it doesn't seem like you had a lot of plan B's lying
around. No, I had no plan B. I literally went to like every art thing every summer for every college, and I had art on my resume. You know, like I had a resume when I applied early admission to Pratt. I had done freelance projects. I had gone to, you know, different colleges for different summer art programs. So I in my mind, it was the only place that I was going. So I think it was helpful. And I think you're right. Like, I think nowadays so many people go, oh, you know, our kids will figure it out. Well, they don't know what to figure out because they don't know what there is to do.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of kids just think they're going to go like, have a YouTube channel and make $1 million on advertising. I mean, that's what my 10-year-old says to me. And I'm like, that's great. You can do that on the side, but you want to do YouTube channel, then you must be interested in writing. So we're going to look at journalism for you and we're going to focus. Let's focus. I don't think there's anything wrong in telling your kids to focus. You can pivot, but you got to focus. And my parents were like, okay, honey, whatever you say, you know, my mom was a secretary and my dad was a carpenter. They had no idea. No idea.
Right.
So like I try to guide my children who are 10 and 16, just like I guide my students. And I can tell you every single career that there is that I know of in every single thing, but I only know a little, right? Like introduce people and children to other people who know stuff and open up their minds to what's out there. But that's the way that I function.
I mean, this is really a side note, but don't you feel like, I feel like every day I hear of jobs where I'm like, I had no idea that was even a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Old, so.
Totally. Like we have a thing going on in the company right now. I can't really say what it is, but I'm like, that's a thing. Like I want to do that. Like I've literally raised my hand in a meeting. And I said, how do I help do that? Because I didn't even know that that was a job, you know? And I think that's super exciting. And even I watched my daughter like raise her hand at school. She goes, I didn't even know we had a sports medicine club, you know? And like, you don't know until you ask and you reach out and you find out. And I have people call me all the time and say, hey, can I pick your brain? Yes. You can always pick my brain because you never know what I'm going to spew out. Like, sure.
So at Warner, I'm skipping over a lot,
but we'll go
back to some stuff. But so at Warner Brothers now, you are VP Design Services and Presentation Strategies at Warner Brothers Global Insights and Analytics.
That's right.
What does your, in that role, what does, I know your day-to-day is probably never the same, but sort of what does your day-to-day look like? And what would you say you spend most of your time doing in that role?
That's so funny. My boss just asked me to put together a percentage of time for my team. So I know this answer. So basically the bulk of my day isn't any different than when I was a director. I just have more of it. So the bulk of my day is spent running meetings. Actually, we call them working sessions. So I have this killer 28-foot office, and I sent you a picture of it, so maybe you can post it for everybody to see.
Okay.
And I have this great office with a 70-inch TV, you know, really comfy chairs, tons of food, and it holds 10 people. And I host, you know, maybe 3 to 5 meetings a day where we come in, we look at the presentations, or we look at whatever I'm designing, and we sit down and we talk about it. You know, we don't have a meeting with a piece of paper where people say, I don't like this, go figure something new out. We have literal working sessions where people write on the whiteboard, or we reorder stuff, or we rethink it, or I edit it on the fly, or I build art on the fly. And we literally work together. And we feel that when we do this with our clients, they have full buy-in, and every piece that we do for them is theirs. So it's not like they tell us to do something, we run off and do it, and then present it to them, and they pick A, B, or C. We don't do that. We create one presentation or one idea, and then from there, we work it as a team, members. So we have researchers, designers, head of sales, you know, assistants to sales teams, lawyers sometimes come in, the people who sell, who keep track of what shows are being sold where. Like, we include everybody. So that is like the bulk of my day. And then once those meetings are over, whatever work needs to be done on those projects, I sit down and do the work. So I do a portion of it in the meeting, and then I do a portion of it outside of the meeting. So that's like the design and writing portion of my day, which is probably like 75%. Mm-hmm. And then the other 15% are like managing my team. So my team does consumer products. We do corporate strategy. We do ad sales. We do distribution sales. We have something called a fan lab, which is focus groups and, you know, more research stuff. So we have a ton of departments here. And then I have 3 members of my team, and they all handle certain clients. So I manage them, and I art direct them, and I give them ideas. One of them is a very senior designer, and one of them is very new, very junior. So I have complete opposite, you know, spectrum on that.
And who are your management. Who are your clients? You kind of just went through. So you have these different departments that within the Warner Brothers Global Insight group. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing sales presentations for them. Yep. You're doing, run me through that.
Okay. So for domestic sales, so it's called Warner Brothers Domestic Television Distribution.
I know them well.
What that group does, right, is they sell shows basically that are either for SVOD or that have 100 episodes, can go in syndication. They sell the previous year's movie slate, and they sell all library titles. So they don't just sell to broadcast, which is, you know, smaller, it's a big bucket, but it's not the main focus anymore. But they also sell to cable. They sell to all the, we call them SVOD, subscription video on demand, which is like Amazon, you know, Hulu, Netflix, exactly. And then they also sell to the AVOD groups, so the ones that are advertising based, so they're free. So they sell to all of them. Then they're coming up with many, many, many other ways to sell our content and distribute our content. So that's like that's my biggest client probably. And then next in line is our consumer products team, ran by Pam Lifford. She's formerly of Disney. She basically runs like most of Warner Brothers now. she's an amazing, super talented woman and business person. So our consumer products team is just exactly what it sounds. They do everything consumer products. So Harry Potter, you know, all the old properties, Looney Tunes, Scooby-Doo, you know, Wonder Woman, all new properties, DC properties, all of it. And what our CP research team does is they'll run like a research thing for Walmart or something about Pampers or I don't know, whatever, like how the brand equity survives and is popular in Australia. I mean, it could be a huge gamut of research things. We'll do focus groups on what art is best for something. And basically I put together, and my team puts together all the presentations back to them or back to Walmart or back to Kmart or back to whomever about why we should do these brands this season or whatever it may be. So those are our 2 probably biggest. And then we do internal corporate stuff. So when we're talking about some of it I can't say, but let's do this at Warner. We'll do a study or we'll do a research strategy or we'll do something. And then we handle the presentation to put together to corporate. So we have like super salesy presentations that are given to Nappy or given to like Hallmark Channel or Netflix. And then we have really corporate stuff that stays internal that's given to Kevin Tsujihara or, you know, Jay Levine, like whoever, like all these inside corporate people. So those are like our three big buckets.
Do you do upfronts too, or that's a different?
Yeah, so we do. I just finished Ellen New Fronts for the Ellen Digital Networks group. Mm-hmm. So we'll do a lot of presentations and we'll do studies for their ad sales teams. So we work with Alana and we do a lot of their presentations. And then we also work with marketing and we do the upfront ad sales deck for our media sales team out of New York. So John O'Hara basically runs that group where he sells ad space for all our shows in syndication and first run. So like Ellen, Extra, the court shows, and anything we have in syndication, Mom, Two Broke Girls, Mike and Molly, Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang. Yeah.
Yeah, Two and a Half Men, like anything that we're still running in syndication that we have any barter for. Mm-hmm. So my guy in New York handles that presentation alongside marketing. So basically marketing designs the look for that deck and then they give it to our team and then we manage it all year.
Okay.
Because they do 400 presentations that they take out to advertisers. So we have to take and we customize every single one of those presentations for every single advertiser.
Just that alone is a lot.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, my guy in New York. Yeah. Yeah. Like poor guy.
So in the meantime, so you already mentioned you have two kids and then you also do many other things, but you also are a professor of graphic design and computer graphics at Otis College of Art and Design. So first of all, how do you have time for that? And second of all, what is it about that motivates you to keep doing that?
Okay, well, the reason I teach is because when I was running Fishbrain, I called Otis and I said, hey, I need a couple interns. You know, how can I go about doing this? So I don't know what they did. Like they posted my job somewhere and along came a few people. So I was looking at portfolios and I honestly did not want to hire anybody because the first question I say is like, well, what do you want to do? Or, you know, I'm looking at your portfolio and I'm saying like, are you an illustrator? Are you a graphic designer? Are you into entertainment? Do you like toys? Like I couldn't figure out what people were and what they liked. And most of them didn't have a resume. So it was really hard for me to choose to hire somebody that didn't have a direction. Remember, I talked about giving kids direction. So I eventually picked somebody and then she kept saying to me, like, I've learned more from you than I've ever learned. So I got thinking like, okay, I should just call Otis. They're down the street from me. Maybe they want to hire me to teach this skill. So I presented them with a couple classes and never heard from them. Not a peep. A year later, I'm 8.5 months pregnant. She calls me up and she's like, hey, so we got your pitch from a year and a half ago and we want to hire you. I was like, I'm almost going to have a baby in like 2 weeks, but okay. So I went down, she met me and she hired me on the spot. And basically what I told her was I don't want to teach like old school graphic design. I want to teach the graphic design business. Like this is what you will do if you do this. Like if you choose this career, this is what you need to know. This is how you need to speak to people. This is what you need to show. And they thought it was a great idea, something they didn't have. So I started teaching a digital media class where I taught, I taught Illustrator, Photoshop, InDesign, Quark Express, and Acrobat. I know Quark Express, what's that? Anyway, so I taught these five programs in 10 weeks. And then after people took that, they were able to then learn and take like intro to graphic design and other programs taught by other teachers. So mine was like the first class that you had to take in order to take more classes. And then the second class that I wanted to teach was print production and branding. So they gave me this other class that was already on their schedule that I revamped. And I taught people how to brand themselves and how to promote themselves and pitch themselves and get hired. So the first 2 weeks, we only figure out who you are and kind of what you look like in the creative space. And then we spend the other 8 weeks doing a logo and writing a resume and writing like a little about me and building a brand. So those two classes to me are the base for what every designer needs to be a good designer. And my ex used to say to me, why are you teaching people to take our jobs? And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm teaching people to come work for me so I don't have to work as much. Like that was the way that I thought about it. Like if I would hire one of my students and I felt like I did okay. So I just fell in love with my students and the teaching, and the school kind of, I guess, fell in love with me. And it's been 16 years. So wow. I don't make time for teaching. Like teaching is my time. So not only have I taught at Otis, but I also opened like a nonprofit art studio where I teach 4-week classes in my house for people who need extra help or need help with freelance projects. I do that. And then I also teach here at Warner. I teach Not Another PowerPoint, it's called. So it's basically where people from the studio bring their presentations to my class and I read them and I teach them. I start teaching them how to do what I do to them. So basically, like people say, oh, you know, make my PowerPoint look pretty. Well, I don't make presentations look pretty. I make presentations make sense. Mm-hmm. So I try to teach that skill to other people around the company that are not designers. So I don't, like I said, like I don't just teach to teach. Like I love to teach. I love to teach people to be good at what I do. I guess it's a good way to put it.
If I was in LA,
really sure.
I would come hang out in your big office and just learn these things. It's awesome.
Okay, so people do that.
I would
people
do that.
Like I get called all the time, like, hey, you don't know me, but I know you. And can I have 15 minutes to show you a deck? Or can I just come listen in on something that's not, you know, confidential? Or can I just take you to lunch to pick your brain? I have students' parents call me and say, we want to take you to lunch. I'm like, okay, you know, and they just want to know, like, because parents, a lot of parents don't understand, like, how you can make a living being an artist. Well, I can tell you. So I think that, and I don't just, like, I always say, like, I'm not the designer that puts the headphones in and just makes stuff look pretty. I don't do that. If you want that, you don't come to me. Because I, like, edit your copy. I move stuff around. I reorganize your pages. I take stuff out you don't really need. You know, I do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I try to teach people how to do that.
So, okay. So that's a lot. So do you have advice? No. What I mean is, do you have advice on establishing some kind of work-life balance? Or is that a dumb question? Because you'll be like, what do you mean work-life balance?
Okay. Well, for years I worked out of my house. So I had no balance. I definitely had less balance when I worked from home. And I even notice now, like when I work from home on Wednesdays, like my kids want me to pick them up. They want me to do the laundry and they want me to cook for them. And my boss wants me to work. So I find it very hard to do that. I mean, that is so freaking hard that I don't even really like to work from home, but I don't like to drive more. So I work from home one day a week. So basically, this is what I've tried to do. I tell my kids, I love to work. I love what I do, right? I love teaching people that it's okay to be a mom and a wife and to work and to travel and to do all of these things. And I notice in my own children, they have drive that maybe I don't see in other kids whose moms don't work. And I'm not critiquing you if you don't work. Please understand that. But my kids think it's cool what I do. So I don't ever feel guilty about working. I do feel guilty about not spending enough time with them. So now that's why I took the full-time job. Because when I was working from home, my clients had no boundary. They were like, well, you're in your office all the time, so it's 9:30 at night, so I'm going to call you. And it was getting to be a little too much. So by taking the job, you know, here at Warner, I really felt like when I left, I was done for the night. And maybe my boss doesn't want that, but I need time with my kids because it takes me an hour to get home. So by the time I get home, it's 8:00. So I literally have spent a half an hour with my kids for the last 10 years. And that's really hard. So that half an hour is really important to all of us because like they know that I work to pay for the house and wanting to go to Stanford and, you know, going to Burma for 10 days and like whatever it is that my children want to do. If I didn't do what I do, they wouldn't have that. So that's very clear to them. So the work-life balance is, yes, my children get less of my time, but the time that they get with me is me and them.
Right.
It's not split up or scattered. And
it's,
I think,
hard,
that I could spend 10 hours with them and I could be working and not pay attention to them at all. Or I could spend 30 to an hour and a half with them every day and only be with them. So that's kind of what we've chosen.
Yeah. So to boil down, I think what you're saying about work-life balance is maybe it's not balanced, but be paying attention to whatever it is that you're doing.
Exactly. So when I'm at work, I am working. They only call me in the evening if they need an Uber or something. Like, we don't connect during the day. It's like they know I'm working and I respect them. They're at school, you know, they don't need me to bug them.
Right.
So yeah, it's like, be in your mind of where you're at and you will get the most work done, and then go home and go home. So
yeah.
I think it's really important, because I don't really think you get a lot. I don't think it's as valuable of time when you work from home, honestly.
That's, I work from home and I feel like I have it sort of dialed, but I also do not have children. So
exactly.
I think that makes a big difference.
Oh yeah. When I work at home, they're like, "Hey mom, what's for dinner?" I'm like, "I don't know. I've been working all day." Like, that's literally my answer. Or my daughter's like, "Oh, I forgot this." Like, the other day I worked from home and I went to her school three times. I was like, "Wait, this is not me working from home. This is me driving back and forth to your school." Or my son's like, "Oh, you're working from home today. I'm sick. Can you come get me?" And I'm like, "No, stay at school."
Yeah, the people, yeah, I have this issue. Like, I'm working from home. I'm not hanging out at home.
Exactly. Or, "Hey, mom, you were home all day. Is my laundry done?" Yeah, it's in the wash. Can you throw it in a dryer for me?
I'd be like, "Can you do the laundry?"
Yeah. Oh, and so I'm single too, which is even harder. But
yeah,
that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, we won't talk about that on today's podcast.
Yeah.
So you, a couple of years ago, participated in Promax's Thrive program. We've talked about it. Not you and I, but I've talked about it in other podcasts. Thrive is an executive development program. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with the program, what you gained from it? And if there's, I know one thing you gained from it that's not necessarily work related, but also, is there anything about the program that you found you apply to your work, or it just has helped you as you proceeded forward in your career?
Oh my God. First of all, greatest thing I ever could have done. Didn't know anything about it until like the day before I filled out the application, when my boss.
It's sort of a miracle you had time to do it.
I know, because it's like a 25-page application or something like that.
And it's a commitment, yeah.
It was. And my boss is like, "Fill this out. I want to nominate you." I'm like, "All right, no problem." And I open it up and I was like, "What?" And I have to say, the first question is such a trick question. It's like, well, I don't even remember what it was, but it was something like, "Describe creativity" or something
oh,
like
God.
That. And I was like, "Oh God, that's exactly what I said." So I said, "I'll just leave that to the end." So I went through and I answered like every single question. And then I was like, "Okay, now I can answer the first question." But I think that what is creativity is such a trick question. So anyway, just as advice.
It's funny because I was noodling with the "what is creativity" question for this interview for you, because you are so creative. But then I kind of came to the same conclusion, like, what does that question mean? What is creativity?
It doesn't mean
it's so vague. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a lot of people give you like bullshit answer, like, "Oh, it's the passion for whatever." But like I always believe that anybody who truly answers those questions, it's like they're answering what they think you want to hear. So I'm not really into like, if you could be a tree, what kind of tree you would be, or what is creativity. I'm not into that stuff, especially as a teacher. Like, I'm not into that. But the one thing that, so I did eventually answer it, but I answered in a very vague like sense of like, anything that you can think of is creative. Like, that's basically what my answer. And it doesn't have to be in art, right? So how you parent,
definitely,
how you talk to people, how you dress, you know, how you solve any problem. You know, I once, you know, when my kids are bad, I make them lay next to each other in the bed until they're laughing. Like, to me, that's being creative. So anything that you can think of that's something you haven't seen anybody do is creative. If you've seen somebody do it, I don't think it's creative. So creativity is weird for me. But the one thing I learned, my biggest takeaway from that Thrive thing was how fun it can be to work with people you don't know. To go into something completely blind with, you know, in my case, 16 other people, and be immediately partnered to make something or build something or accomplish something. And you don't even know them. Like, I didn't even remember their names for the first exercise. And that to me made me feel like I could do anything. Like, at work, I didn't always feel like I could accomplish anything. But after I did that stuff with them, not even knowing them, I was like, oh my God, I could pretty much do anything I want. And that's how I felt. So that was my biggest takeaway, just being able to work with strangers and people I didn't know and accomplish so much in a really small amount of time. And then my second thing that I loved was I love Esther and I love Steve. So Esther is the...
Esther Weinberg,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, Esther Weinberg. She's like a major executive coach. And I think everybody in the world should know her. And
yeah, she's awesome.
Meet her.
We've done a podcast with her. She's great.
Oh, if you haven't listened to her podcast, you know, people should listen to her podcast. She's incredible. And Steve is like a ray of light for ProMax and a ray of light for people. He is the most friendly, outgoing, and I'm not getting paid here. I adore him. And I learned so much from him and just the way that he talks to people and respects people. You want to be like him. And I just felt really honored, you know, to have that. So there are so many good things about ProMax, but those are what, like, my two favorite things.
The other thing that you didn't mention, but I think is cool, is that those people that you worked with who were strangers ended up becoming your really good friends, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like so what happened was we got to go to Terranea, which is this awesome resort. And eventually, you know, we spent 3 days learning stuff, learning about branding, learning about ourselves, doing these like self-writing exercises, which I've done with my students for years, and doing like self-expression art pieces and just getting to finally know these strangers, basically. And at the very end, we made like those sticky big note. What are those big post-it notes people put on the wall? We made five or six big post-it notes, and we came up with like the 6 topics that affected us most in like the 3 days. And you went and stood under your topic. And I stood under my topic, which was like branding. And then 3 other people stood under it. So all the options out there, the four of us stood under branding. And those 3 guys are like my best buds. You know, and 2 of them were in my first exercise at ProMax where I didn't know the people and we had to do this thing together. So I thought that was so funny that we ended up pretty much in the same group, you know, at the end. And we built a presentation. We wrote a whole story to teach people about branding. And then we got to present it at ProMax in LA. I don't know what year that was, but I think
it was 17. Yeah.
17. So that was very fun. And I think those are available somewhere to watch too. But we all told our branding story. And mine was a little out of the ordinary. I basically talked about how I branded myself with the word fuck. Fabulously unapologetic, creative Kathleen. And I had seen Steve going up the escalator when I was going down. And I said, hey, I'm not sure if you know this, but I'm going to say fuck like 1,000 times today. And he goes, unapplausible deniability or whatever he yelled out at me. And I'm like, okay, gotcha, bye, peace out. You know, and it was like the funniest thing. So then there's pictures that have been taken of me where it's just like F-U-C-K on like hello, my name is.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, like all over. So I did my presentation. It was really fun. I had a really great time. But then the funniest part, and my whole group is great. I mean, you know, JC talked about his story and being French and coming over here, and he works at Sundance. And then we had Ian from Spike, which is now the Paramount Network. And then Rob from... where does he work? Pop. So from Pop TV. So that's all like really fun, and we all did our own little branding stories. But I was walking on the street going to a party. Some agency invited me to a party, and this woman grabs me and she goes, oh my God, you're the fuck lady. And she just grabs me like on the side of the road in the middle of downtown LA. And I'm like, hey, I'm the fuck lady. And then she started like asking me all these questions. And then last year at ProMax, the same thing happened. Like that's I was standing so by myself and a bunch of people walked up to me and they're like, aren't you the fuck lady from last year? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of am.
I'm pretty sure I covered that session and that there's a story about it up on Brief. So I will look and link to it and people can see. But I remember this all very distinctly, actually. Let's talk a little bit about, so since you've done Thrive, so you came into Thrive as a director, you are now VP.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about making that move.
Yeah. Okay, so basically promotions are never guaranteed. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been somewhere, how great you are at what you do.
You tell your millennials this?
Yeah, I mean, just because you've been here for... No, they don't. They don't. And the worst part is, a lot of times, you know, they threaten to leave and whatever, and then people get scared, so they promote them. But I'm almost 50 years old, and I don't really come from that space. Like, I come from the space of you work hard and you prove yourself, and then you get promoted. And that's how I feel. I feel that those are the criteria that you should be promoted under. If you're going to threaten me to leave, well,
leave.
Go leave. I mean, yeah. I've had many offers and I haven't even told my boss because I don't want to leave. I like my job. I like where I am. I like my boss. And I have had many bosses and I like them all, but I love her. Like I say this like funny thing to her. I go, I'm your human. I mean, you know, you're my human. Like I love her. I would take a bullet
for
her.
Everything.
Like I love her.
Your boss is so important.
Yeah, it's so important. And I learn from her and I trust her. And I don't know, like I always get teary eyed when I talk about her. So I would never do that to her. And I feel like if somebody would do that to me, well then go. Because like if you have value and you have worth, you don't need to threaten me. I'm going to see it. So that's my first thing. Like I've been here, I was here 8 years before I got promoted. And I basically had to, because my job doesn't become vice president. My job is a director, and that is it. And HR mentioned many times that that's a director position. We don't make that position a vice president. But the thing that I had to eventually explain, and my boss had to explain, was Kathleen doesn't just design stuff. She doesn't take what's on the page and just make it look pretty. And I've told you guys this, right? Like, so I literally did a timeline. Like, here's where the department was when I was a freelancer here. Here's how you used to utilize me. You had a full-time director, you had a designer, but yet you sent me and my company all the projects that needed to be edited and worked on. Then you brought me in-house and I did X, Y, and Z. And I literally built a timeline that said, this is where I started and this is where I am today. And I have done all of these things as a director. And this is where I want to go next. So I didn't just say, hey, I've been here 10 years, promote me. Like, no way would I ever say that. So this timeline was very, here's all the departments I used to work with, here's all the departments I work with now, here's all the departments I want to work with. And I gave that to my boss. And then we have an internal sheet. It's like, God, I don't know, it's like that Thrive application. It's like 25 pages. And you got to fill out like 2% of my time is doing this, 5% of my time is doing that, 20% of my time is doing this. And I had to fill out that while doing my job. So it took me about 2 months to like do all of this stuff and write it up where it made sense and share. I shared it with people to say, hey, does this make sense? Like, what do you guys think? And then finally, you know, my boss was able to take that and say, look, we're changing. You know, our team is changing. Who we support is changing and we need to change. So they finally did like approve it, but it was not easy at all.
But it's also like what you do isn't even, I mean, you do design, you do edit, but you also lead teams. You also are mentoring people. You also, you know, there's a lot more things going on there than just your design job.
Yep. And, but the thing is, that's what they see, right?
Right.
Oh, designer. But, you know,
it's a good point because I think people, I know this for myself, but I think you have to advocate for, this is what I'm actually doing every day. This is the value I'm creating for the company.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't tell them, I don't think people just know.
They don't
know. They just kind of go along in their lives.
And if you are the type of person that kind of works independently, you need to do like a daily or a weekly, not like, hey, like justify your job. But like my boss, she never asked me what I'm doing, right? Because she knows I'm always doing. But I still keep track like, hey, we did these, you know, 20 projects this month, or we reached out to these different departments that we don't normally work with. And we don't bill back, right? Like we are basically like, my service is free. So we don't make money off what I do. And it's not like I have to.
Well, that's not really true. I mean,
well, we make money like we make money with our deals with our actual clients.
Yeah. I mean, you're creating assets so people can go out and sell and make money.
Yeah. But if I have somebody,
you do.
Right. But if I have somebody in another department that we don't service at all, which right now, like, for example, facilities, we don't usually do work with facilities. Well, the guy took my class. And then at the Learning Network. And then he called me up and he said, hey, you know, I do this yearly deck. Can you help me? Well, I don't normally do work with him. So I was like, well, absolutely. You know, I'll sit down and I'll help you go through it and I'll give you ideas and I'll give you notes, but I won't do the work for you. But I have to share with her that I'm doing all that. So right. If you don't tell your bosses, and it's not bragging, it's keeping them informed. It's allowing them to speak on your behalf, right? So I'm always telling her what we're doing or sharing emails that I get from people about good jobs that somebody in the team did or I did or whatever. And I think that that's how you get promoted, you know, and that and taking classes, right? Taking management classes, taking more computer classes, taking an art class, go learn to draw, do anything that keeps you creative and learning new stuff. You know, go to the HOW conference, go out and about and ask if you can do new stuff. And when they see that, and then you put a pitch together about why you deserve this promotion or this next step or why you want it, you know, then you can get promoted. And I think Thrive had helped me with that. I think Esther helped me like realize that I shouldn't sit back, but that I should speak out. And I think that was another valuable lesson that I learned from Esther, particularly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very valuable. You've been doing this job for a while now, but is there anything that you miss because you are a VP now, so you're working with a lot of different people? I mean, do you ever miss some of just day-to-day creative stuff you would normally do that you don't get to do now?
Nope.
Okay.
I love what I got it all. I really feel like I got it all. Like I didn't like taking, you know, a piece of key art that somebody else did and, you know, putting some type on it. I don't really like that. That's boring to me. So I don't miss any of that. I like being in the meetings. I like being in the strategy side. I like being asked to proofread stuff and give notes. My boss does this thing. She's like, Kathleen, read this, because if you get it, everybody will. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I like being thought of as not a researcher who understands complicated stuff, even though I do, but as an everyday person. And I like that my boss takes her complicated information and wants everyday people to understand it. So I don't. I paint at home all the time and I throw pottery. So I don't miss it. Mm-mm.
That's a perfect segue, actually, because I was going to ask you. So I'll link this up also on the website, but Kathleen has this amazing website with tons of art on it. So how do you, I mean, with the teaching, again, we've reviewed how much you do, but then you also do a lot of actually very creative, traditionally creative things like painting and throwing pottery. So how do you work that into your life and be able to continue doing that stuff?
Well, for a while I hosted some like paint and wine nights, you know, and I had a little art studio because that's what people wanted and they wanted to hang out with me and listen to music and paint. So I kind of did like these social nights. And I invited my friends into that circle to join me. And just instead of going to a bar or going dancing, you know, I invite people to paint and be creative with me. So that's one thing. And then I've always done it with my kids, right? Like on a Saturday afternoon, I would be like, oh, let's go do a painting or I don't know, whatever, you know, let's walk around the neighborhood and draw. So I've always just, that's kind of where my roots started. And I never really stopped doing that. So you know, I probably have my fiance was just looking at all my artwork and he's like, you ever going to hang this? And I'm like, there's like 90 pieces. Like, what am I going to do with them all?
Yeah. I don't have wall space for all of it.
Yeah. He's like, well, we need a gallery. And I'm like, okay, one thing at a time. Like, I cannot be a gallery owner and a, you know, vice president and a teacher.
Maybe you could. Yeah, if anyone could, you could.
Maybe. I mean, I did own the small little art studio for a while, but it was just too much for my brain to do. So
at a point, we're one person.
Yeah, I just like to be creative. I like to create. I got hired a few times to do like 2-hour paintings and I was like at places in windows, like painting for 2 hours and people would just like watch me and come talk to me. Like I like doing stuff like that. That's just really creative outlet stuff.
So we sort of covered this, but along those lines, what would you say your passions are? And I mean, both creative and maybe non-creative. What are the things that you really enjoy outside of work, which you also love?
Oh, I love to travel. I love to be with my kids and I love to be with my fiance. Like those are like my three favorite things. Like I love to drive to like, I don't like to drive to work, but I like to drive to like San Francisco and go to like a Stanford game and then go to a museum. And then like, I just like to do things. I like to be out and about. I spend my whole day in my office with no windows working, you know, like a 10-hour day. So the minute I get a chance, I'll get on a plane and I'll go somewhere or I'll drive somewhere. So I just was in Europe for 8 days and then I'm going to the East Coast next, in 2 weeks. And then I was in Stanford in November, I just love to get up and go. I love to travel.
All right. So now here's a bad segue, but what, and also sort of tied back to Thrive, which is what role, I feel like it sounds like you mentor a lot of people. So what role, A, would you say mentorship has played in your own career? But then B, what role does mentoring other people play in your career?
Okay. So I've never really had, I have to kind of think about how I want to answer this. So I never really had a formal mentor per se. I think the one mentor I had was this executive over at ABC, and that was during Thrive. But prior to that, I didn't really have any mentors. I became very good friends with all my bosses and I used to hang out with them, used to ask them questions. We would sit and talk about projects and ideas. And I had this one boss at a little agency, and he was kind of the marketing guy, and I was kind of the art girl. And I would say, hey, teach me how to name things or teach me how to write a contract. And I think that I just asked everybody I ever worked with a lot of questions and kind of had made self mentors. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just drill you for 3 hours about this one thing, I'll learn about it.
Yeah.
So nobody ever said hey, Kathleen, let me mentor you. But I think people were open to me asking the craziest questions. And even now, if I'm in a meeting with Dave Decker or, formerly Ken Warner, I would stop them and go, hey, can I just ask a question? Because I don't really understand that. And I'm never afraid to say I don't get it or question something. And I going back to my boss, Kathleen, if you don't get it, other people won't get it. So I don't have any mentors, actually. I just have this way of self-mentoring by asking people around me questions. So that's my answer for that one, if it can be that.
But I also think that's good advice, because it's sort of saying, take the resources around you and do ask the questions and do be curious and make the most of the expertise that's around you, which I think people do, but I think some people take more advantage of than others.
Yeah. And a lot of people always ask me this question. They say, who's your favorite designer? I'm like, I don't have one, because I don't really follow people like that. I don't have any favorite anything. That's not who I am. But I'll look at something and I'll go, oh, I like the color. One of my favorite inspirations lately was some potato chip bags. They were these really funky colors. And I don't know who designed it. I mean, I think it was written right on the picture I saw, but I didn't even look. But I'll take a picture of that and keep it in my phone. And I don't have favorite designers. I couldn't tell you really who designed what. But I have things that inspire me.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I like to go. I don't ever want to teach my student to mimic somebody or to just have one style. I like you to draw your inspiration from multiple places. And a lot of my students will try to brand themselves, and I don't know where they pick these colors, but I'll say to them, what are you doing? Look at your wardrobe in the last week. There's your palette. And they go, oh my God, you're right. I pretty much wear these four colors all the time. So I think we need to draw from ourselves and not try to be like others or follow other people so closely, because I think it makes us want to be like them. And I don't want to be like anybody. I want to be like me.
My next question actually ties to that pretty closely, which is, and you have students, so you probably do this all the time, is what advice do you give creatives who are up and coming in this field? And I'm sure there's lots of different pieces of advice, but is there anything that you think this is pretty consistently useful?
Yeah, I mean, I basically tell people, first of all, don't ever work for free. That is my biggest advice.
I agree. Don't
work for free. Okay? And don't promise it tomorrow, because you are valuable. There are so many $30logos.com and I don't know, so much stuff you can get online that's just crap, and you need to show that you are valuable. So if somebody hires you, don't assume they're asking you to do it for free. Your response is, of course I could do that, and it'll be about this much, and then and can I have it tomorrow? Well, I know you cannot, but something like that could take this many days, and I will have you sketches by this day. Because I think you sell yourself short when you assume people are asking you to work for free, and when you think you can get it done in 5 minutes. I mean, my great example, I
both those pieces of advice myself all the time.
Yeah. Those are my two pieces of advice for everybody. And my two greatest examples is, no matter how fast I want the baby to come out, it's going to take 9 months. You know what I mean? So that's yeah. like number one.
Ideally.
And, you know, if I'm trying a new recipe and I go into Ralph's and I say, hey, you know what? Can you give me these 10 ingredients? I'm going to take them home. I'm going to cook this thing. And if my kids will eat it, I'll come back and pay you. Yeah, no. They're going to say no. So you need to respect yourself and respect your talent. So that's like my one big advice. And my other big advice is do not say, oh, I don't design that thing. Like, I don't design that widget, because you do. If you don't know anything about it, do research. If you have never done it before, ask somebody. You know, go online and look up what it is, or sit down and have a meeting with that person, or say, hey, I'd like to find out more about the music studio. Can I come and you can give me a tour before I quote you any further, right? Mm-hmm. Say yes to these projects and then learn about them. I have so many people who are like, oh, I just want to do invitations. Like, okay, well, you're not going to be having a nice house if you're just doing invitations. Like, you need to branch out into other things, and you need to have many clients in many forms of need, whether it's real estate, whether it's entertainment, whether it's teaching, whatever it is. Like, you have to have multiple types of clients. So those are the three big things.
Those are good, all good pieces of advice. And like I said, the first two, I don't work for free, and don't say you're going to turn it in. I mean, I tell people that work for me, don't tell me you can do it in 15 seconds, because you're not. And you don't want to set that expectation. So I 100%
agree with you
on that.
If you, like, I'll use, okay, I have this expression, I call it, I see it done. So a lot of times, like, people will ask me to do something and I literally know what I'm going to do. But I'll take the time and explore like four or five other options, and I might do it as soon as we hang up. But then I sit on it, not only to make them realize that it takes time to do it, but I might come up with a better idea.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of times they usually pick my first idea, but that's just from years of experience and like knowing your client. But I like to think about it. I like
and
to
knowing yourself as a creative, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Because I know that for myself too, there's times where it's different with writing, but you know, you write something and then you let it sit a day or two and you come back to it with sort of fresh eyes and not so attached to it.
Well, what do they say? What do they say when you're doing college applications, right? First draft is like a D, second or third draft is like a C, you know, and then you work your way up to that A, right? When you're writing and stuff like that. So I'm a firm believer in that. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you watch TV? Do you have any time to watch television?
Ugh, people always ask me that, even here. So so I literally have to, like, again, you asked me what my outlets were before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do not come home and like sit on my computer and work in Illustrator because I don't want to. But I have two crazy things. I watch Say Yes to the Dress and I watch House Hunters International. Like, I have them on my DVR. I watch them wherever I go. I put them on my phone. Those are my two things.
Why? What is it about those that you love?
They're not serialized, because I can't follow. I can't keep up. And they're funny and they're creative and they're exciting. I love watching women try on dresses and their family like having opinions about it. I think it's freaking hysterical. So my daughter and I watch it and we literally like, nope. 1, 10, 9, we vote on it. It's actually something the whole family can watch, which I'm big into.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I put it on sometimes if I'm working from home and I'll just let my whole DVR of the episode just play all day. And I don't know. It's like, I can't believe I'm even admitting it out loud.
No way. I think people watch stuff like that all the time. I think every person I talk to has something
so
like
funny.
That they watch. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Funny. So funny. And then House Hunter International, because I plan on moving to Europe. So I love that show, and I don't know. I just can't get enough of it. So
okay, can I ask you about
shows.
That? Because I saw that in your resume that you wanted to move to Italy at some point. So what's the status of that dream?
Okay, so here's the my family's from there originally, and I went back in '99 and I found my family, and they live in this little tiny town on top of a hill. And I knocked on the door and I said, hey, I'm Kathleen from the US and I'm your family. And they said, hey, come in. I was like, wow, really? So I kind of just, when I was there the first time, I went alone and I didn't want to leave. Like, I literally called my boyfriend at the time and I said, I'm not coming back. And he was like, no, we just bought a house. You have to come back. So I eventually went back, but I don't know, when I'm there, I just feel like I'm home. Uh-huh. So it's been a dream of mine to move there. So I have been in the process of working on getting my dual citizenship. And it's a lot of work because I got to get birth certificates and marriage certificates for like all my family so that I can, you know, fill out the form. So I'm missing one thing right now. And as soon as I get that, then I'm going to apply for my dual citizenship.
Wow.
And I just love it there. I feel, I don't know, like full circle. I feel like I've gone full circle when I'm there.
What's a longer application, dual citizenship or Thrive application?
Oh God. Okay, they might be tied. but I have to say, I made it through the Thrive application in a day. But I closed my door and did nothing else. So this one I've been working on for 6 months because it's hard to find like your birth certificate of your great grandmother born in 1800 in some town you don't know the name of. Yeah. So it's been quite a challenge. But yes, my plan is to eventually move there. I'm now engaged to somebody, actually, mm-hmm. which I never thought was going to happen in my lifetime. So I've hit a little twist or a little wrinkle or a little curve in the road.
I was going to say, is he wanting to move to Italy?
He loves it there. And we just went this year. I just took him for the first time. And he thinks that I should follow my dreams, whatever they are. So I'm moving forward. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I know the city I want to live in and all that great stuff. So I just got to get
city?
That. I want to live in somewhere in the Lake Cuomo area.
Oh, with George.
Yeah, with George. Oh, yeah, yeah. Me and George. I'm going to rent a room from him.
Okay, I'm sure he's fine with that.
You come visit me.
Okay. All right, I think that's an odd place to wrap up, but a good place to wrap up. So thank you so much, Kathleen. It was so great to talk to you, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you. It was wonderful. And anybody can reach out to me, you know, if they have any questions about presentations or anything like that, too.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Kareem Taylor produced this episode. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate Lekier-Marion contributes to Daily Brief. Follow Promax BDA on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.